Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
Leadership happens within a culture. How cultures experience a paradigm shift is often a question leaders need assistance with. Today, we will hear from an expert who helps leaders and organizations improve from where they are. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Mary Kay Durant. Mary Kay is a nationally known expert on the topic of human fulfillment. Her work has touched thousands of senior leaders at more than 100 companies, including Deloitte, Pepsi, Johnson & Johnson, and Hyatt. Mary Kay Durant, welcome to Sound Practice.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I just gave you the briefest of introductions. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background?
Well, as you stated, I've spent a lot of my career in the corporate world doing a lot of transformation work inside large systems. And what I found in my mid-30s was that there was a vast difference in the organizations or teams that I saw when leaders possessed certain qualities or orientations to the way they work that either created a vibrant, vital place where people thrived or created a desolate, dry place where people got into burnout. And I became really passionate about what was it that could help organizations create places where human beings flourished. Because what I believe is when we flourish in our work, we go home more fulfilled to our families and communities. And so I really didn't start my career at all in healthcare. As a matter of fact, I've only found my way into it because the things that I have discovered along my 30-year inquiry into this question led me to believe that people who are doing deeply purposeful mission-filled work, which physicians and physician leaders are doing, are most susceptible to some of the dynamics in our workplaces and environments that cause burnout, cause depletion, and limit the ability for us to fulfill who we were intended to be as in whatever work we choose to do. And so I've been really blessed in the last decade to have the opportunity to work with a lot of physician leaders and physician executives inside different kinds of healthcare systems, really taking these ideas to full life. And so while I'm both don't have a background in medicine, I've found a great place of contribution in serving those that.
But you do have a bit of a background in a roundabout way that I found out through your father that connects you to the parent organization of this podcast, the American Association for Physician Leadership. Can you tell me about that?
Well, I am so immensely proud of my dad. I'm one of six children, and my father was a pediatrician. He has dedicated his whole life, not just to the six of us, but to the well-being of children in the world. So he was a physician and pediatrician first. He went into administration because he saw systemic issues even 40 years ago that he wanted to help change and make care better for children and think about whole child care and really worked hard to be sort of the hero that was going to help change the system. More to say on that later, maybe, but he was the president of the American College of Physician Executives and a board chair. So when I had the opportunity to be invited to be with you today, my dad was really proud to see that I had found my way into a community that he holds very dear.
Well, how very nice. He must be so proud of all the work that you've done helping healthcare organizations around the country. And when you were first talking about burnout and helping people, it occurred to me that maybe unlike other industries, when you're helping healthcare providers, you're really helping patients as well. Do you agree?
It's one of the things I feel most grateful for about the work I'm able to do with physicians and physician leaders is that I look at the care that they're providing and feel so moved by the inspiration of the work and the dedication of what it brings, and feel very proud that I can be a small part of helping them find resilience in really difficult circumstances and find ways of working together that help the whole of the care team be more both effective and fulfilled. So yes, I would agree. I like to take a little bit of that patient care that they provide home in my heart as gratitude for the work I get to be a part of.
Well, you're doing important work. Let's talk about something that you've mentioned about shifting from doing and performing to being and partnering. Why is this shift especially important for physician leaders?
I think it's both important and challenging for physician leaders. So if you think about the way that the process by which someone becomes a physician, that process requires a really intentional focus on doing, performing, and at incredibly excellent levels that require an immense amount of grit to get there. So by design, physician and physician executives have learned that doing, performing, getting all of the work done is how they achieve the outcomes that they care about. And yet, we are not machines. We work in a world that really asks us to be machines, to produce at the timelines of machines, to be independent and be really productive. And that is actually at some point becomes the very thing that then drains us from the being side, the part of us where our values, our compassion, our essence of the things that we most care about in our heart and spirit that actually fuel us for the energy of the doing, where they get nourished and replenished. So if we're only focused on the side of production and doing, we're actually going to deplete ourselves into exhaustion and into burnout. And so learning to balance that, you know, that idea of balancing that being side, learning of how do we start to weave space for that into our days? And that is the beginning of actually having the kind of resilience we need to navigate the really complex, difficult systems that healthcare is today.
It occurs to me that medicine's both an art and a science. And I think I agree with you that there is a primary focus on the science and maybe a little less so on the art. And perhaps that's because we don't have great metrics for art. I think we, when it comes to science, we can have more objective metrics. How do you, when you're working with folks, how do they measure success? How do you measure success?
It's a really great question. I'm going to try to give some answer to that, and then I'm going to tell a little story that comes from Native American culture that I think ties to what you're pointing towards. So it sounds like a very simple measure, but one of the things that I start with is to say we are first human beings, and we need to first look at the human being and measures for us as individuals, and then start to look at a team and even an organization. So at the level of human being, one of the measures I love is something I call return on energy. So we all measure ROI in our businesses, and we think a lot about that as one of those measures that's easy to access. Return on energy is actually something we can check in with ourselves on every day or even in a moment and say, the things that I'm doing and how am I doing them, is it draining energy out of me like I'm a colander and it's leaking everywhere? Or is it actually returning energy to me? And let me get curious about why and what tiny adjustments I might make. So one of the things that nature shows us is that small adjustments made consistently is actually how adaptation, how innovation, and how change happens. So a return on energy kind of metric that says, let me get attuned to the state of my energy, what's draining it. Let me look at the activities I'm doing every day and not change the whole system, because that's where we get overwhelmed and actually feel a victim to something, but small adjustments that we can make. And part of the work model that we'll talk about later is a way of starting to think about understanding, noticing, and measuring my return on energy so that I can slowly move it to a more resilient state. So I think that's a measure that can happen at an individual. I also think that you can extend that to a team and say, if we're applying these things as a team, the whole work model that we'll talk about later, we can start to say, what are the measures of resilience of our team? So there are some really good models around resilience, and we can look at those models and say, are we increasing or decreasing? We can look at trust and say, are we increasing or decreasing trust among this small team? And that trust is a really great indicator. There was a beautiful article on the neuroscience of trust that connected it to energy, productivity, and vitality of work that's being done, the quality of work. And so there are some measures in those areas that are perhaps not quite as easy to track as numbers on a spreadsheet, but are quite tangible.
Excellent. Can you give me an example of maybe an organization or an individual you worked with that you were able to show that type of improvement?
Yes, I'll give an example from a pediatric system, working with a physician executive and then with a broader team. And in this case, this executive, her leadership was really in the area of the clinical care and moving from being nationally recognized to internationally recognized. And she was finding that as her leadership expanded and the demands on her expanded, she was finding herself burned out and exhausted in ways that she couldn't understand. Now, this may be a little out there for some of your listeners, but we actually spent some time in nature with horses. And horses are incredible mirrors for us of the patterns that we're not aware of that we go to under stress. Because if you're standing in front of a horse that's 1,000 pounds and faster than a domestic cat, and it's at liberty to move, your nervous system might be activated. And so you'll be reacting with more your unconscious patterns. And in the horse mirroring those to you, it's a chance to see patterns that with small adjustment in the way you're leading, as you bring that into awareness, you can choose something that's more aligned with your values and your essence, like who you really are. So by spending some time with the horse and then translating that into leadership behaviors, this executive was actually able to understand how some of the patterns that were sufficient when she was leading at a national level were insufficient for someone who had an international presence. At the same time, we were then able to take some of the same practices and apply them in a series of workshops with her team that were really designed around how do we start to move from being transactional with each other, just getting the tasks done, to starting relating at a deeper level of vulnerability and trust, and in that process, get a better understanding of what we each needed for us to be able to show up well inside the tough demands of our work. And what's fascinating to me about that is each person needed something that nobody else could have imagined or guessed. If we'd stayed in transactional mode, we would have never discovered them. But because we could build trust and vulnerability, the team is actually much more fluid and able to work in the kinds of ways that you might see a mermation of birds, which I know you like the birds, but you might see them. One bird makes a small adjustment to its wings and all the other birds can sense what might be needed. And they end up moving in these very fluid patterns. So this team started to behave more that way. The other dynamic that naturally came out in this is that if a bird in that flight pattern needs rest, it never lands alone. Other birds will land with it, stay with it, and then rejoin the group. And so they started to create these natural ways of moving that had small adjustments of care that made the whole of the team more resilient.
What a great example. Well done. You talk about a word that I like, but I hadn't seen used before. Stuckness. I feel that I've experienced some stuckness. Okay. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and how it relates to physician leaders that can use feedback as maybe a compass to help them navigate leadership challenges.
I think this is a concept that physicians get really intuitively when they're providing care for patients, because they are trained to notice stuckness, not as a technical term, so they might be cringing right now, but stuckness in the systems that they treat, whether that system is a heart, cardiac system, you know, in the overall well-being of a human, depending on the kind of care that they're trained to provide. So those stuckness moments when they're looking at a patient, those things that are not working or flowing with the way healthy looks like, they see as data that helps them then identify what the source of the problem might be and get at root causes and move towards greater health for that patient. What if we turned the lens around and looked at the places of frustration and stuckness, whether it's in our leadership, with our teams, rather than looking at the whole healthcare system, look close to home for a place of stuckness, a place of frustration, and then look at what might that be showing me as an opportunity for making some small adjustments in the way that we're engaging that might make movement towards greater health.
And you help people with that, do you not?
Yes.
And let's get more specific. Can you share a story of a physician who was able to bring their human spirit alive to thrive at work, and how you helped accomplish that?
Yes. I'm going to share two stories, one that will be more direct and then one that will seem less indirect, but I hope might provide some inspiration for some of the physician leaders who are doing such important work. So the more direct is, I was working with a physician leader who had a complex group of teams that were providing care, and they were disconnected and siloed, and quality was being diminished in the care because of that dynamic. And what we looked at was, what could we see in a healthy ecosystem in nature that might help translate into human systems and the way that they were working? So one of the things that we could then start to talk about is, what maybe needs to be pruned? What maybe needs to be, you know, weeded out in the ways that we're relating with each other? So this looking at ourselves as an ecosystem gave language and an ability to speak about things that were perhaps uncomfortable, if I had to say it directly to you, but through a nature metaphor, started to give us access to naming some of the areas that were actually creating those silos. At the same time, we needed to do some work around moving from, again, this transactional way of relating and working with each other to starting to build some trust, because we know that things that are connected actually grow. So the combination of some work on trust and relating, combined with this truth speaking around nature's systems, was enough to break through some of the old patterns and start to create some healthy new patterns. My takeaway from that team is that this group of teams started performing significantly better. So the quality of care went up, their retention on their teams improved. So there were a lot of things that you could measure, back to your earlier question, quite well. What made me most happy was that a couple of the people came to me and said, I have a better relationship with my ex. Yes. I have a better relationship with my aging parent. I feel like I'm more engaged with my community and my neighborhood in healthier ways. So what I love is, as we practice some of these things, because we're human beings, how we relate one place, we relate everywhere. So as we start to make these small shifts at work and see these positive outcomes, it flows into other areas of our life, which I think are really great for a very broken and divided world. So I'm going to share this second story in hopes that there might be an executive physician leader who themselves might be sensing something here is not working, and I don't really know what to do about it. So I had the opportunity, I get to spend a lot of time in beautiful natural settings with leaders. I had the opportunity with a physician who was running a really significant, quite large system, who was sensing some things were not working, but couldn't actually name the source of that. We spent a day hiking and noticing and interpreting what were we seeing around us, and what could the things that we were noticing in that in nature setting show us about the system that we were inside of. And what ended up happening for this executive, physician executive, was that there were things that she started to notice that day that she said, I want to play with some experiments, which is how nature adapts and grows. So she had a series of small experiments that she was able to identify and work on over 6 months. And after that time, the large sort of disruption that was there to happen, maybe like a bit of a wildfire, came to fruition. And she was actually in a position of, she was prepared to navigate it because she had trusted that gut feel and then gotten some outside perspective from a living system that is always moving towards resilience, adaptability, growth, the things we say we want in our environments, and use those clues to help her try some experiments. And so I offer that to say, this isn't rocket science. This is just about looking a little differently at the wisdom of nature that's all around us. And I think physician leaders, like they are in love with human beings and human wellness. We are a part of nature. We forget that. So this is just an invitation to say, sometimes look at it a little differently and you might find your own answers.
One of the things that occurs to me, and I don't want to tread on the toes of our audience today, Mary Kay, but physicians are not always the easiest group to work with. And I'm interested if you've encountered some challenges when working with healthcare leaders and physician executives, and if so, how you overcame those.
I also have just an immense respect for physician, like you, physician leaders, and for what physicians do. And I'll go back to my dad and then answer your question. So I think about my dad, who had a hope around creating something for children's well-being that was very different than the system even 40 years ago, which I think has only gotten more broken. And I think about his passion, his care, all of who he poured into that, was unable to fulfill the potential that he had for impact because of some of the very training he had had that made him effective. And so I think some of what I run into is that what we've been trained to do well, to be logical, linear, to be decisive, to be the one in the room who makes the difficult decisions and moves things forward, that very training actually isolates us. And particularly as we elevate as leaders, it can become more lonely. And we know that anything that is isolated is limited in its capacity to take in the creative solutions that are needed to problems. And so I think the challenge I run into is that training often has them say, what am I going to learn from nature or a horse or from anything like that? Like, I have all this science and training, back to your earlier point. And what I try to do is be respectful of that, but also say, there is this art that's there. There is this dimension of humanity that is so much more than what we can see in science, in yourself and in the people you work with and the people you care for. Are you open to just exploring that a little bit, just getting a little opening for it? And some say no, and that's fine. But there are a growing number of them that say, you know what? I feel better when I just go out in my backyard and watch a sunset. I feel better when I, you know, enjoy nature, sit by the ocean. We each have a different thing. And so it's just like, take one more step and say, what if there's even some wisdom there beyond the feeling good and what it does for our nervous systems that can actually give us insight? And so I just look for those little openings and ask for small experiments.
Well, it sounds like some of these experiments may help and have helped people with a problem that is really pervasive and large scale in the healthcare community, which is burnout. And you're certainly aware this is a chronic problem that many physician leaders face. Can you describe any ways that your approach helps address this, maybe even in a systemic way?
Yes, I would say that we can look at what we see about how systems change in nature or even social systems with human beings and get a lot of insight about how we can address the issue of burnout. So I think if we try to think of it in the whole arc of a leader's career or in the broader context of the whole system that might need some regeneration, that becomes overwhelming. But if we can look at it and say, where, how close to home can I address this? That's where I think our power for influence changes. And I think it goes back to this idea that small adjustments compound over time into really big movements that we can't imagine. And so the work model is to say, what if we started to rethink the ways we work? And rather than having the doing and performing and the checklist and all the things we need to get done, how we orient, but what if we started to take a slightly different approach to work every day? And inside that model, I do find that each of those steps of that model really can help people begin to address at its root the causes of their burnout, and then from there begin to apply it to the teams that they lead. In that, how things happen in social systems with change, or even in an ecosystem, is with small communities of practice that network. So change doesn't happen because someone at the top mandates we're all going to do this new thing. But by people coming together in small teams or communities and forming communities of practice and then connecting with other teams or groups who do that, that is actually how systems change. And so I really encourage that kind of model of a movement and a network more than a mandate.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. Can you tell me about your vibrant work model and how physician leaders can practice for themselves and then the model it for their organization?
Yeah, thank you. So the acronym WORK, the first is the W, and the W stands for waking up, and ideally waking up and wonder. And wonder can both be curiosity or it can be almost awe. And so waking up is back to that stuckness, noticing, waking up to the automatic way we might be showing up at work. Waking up to the depletion of our energy, some of the things we've already talked about, waking up to the places we feel stuck and getting curious. But it can also be waking up to something we love and remembering something we love. And here's why that's really important. If we notice a particular kind of care or a human being or a passion we have, and we wake up and we notice that, and then pause for a minute and say, let me wonder, where did that come from in my life? How did I get this relationship, this opportunity? And what we find when we think about that is we notice that there, we like to think our mind and our hard work and all the doing created everything, but what we see is the magic of life. That if we hadn't been to this event or talked to this person or got this connection, if we hadn't had that really hard, difficult thing that happened that made us passionate about a particular kind of care, if there hadn't been those things along the way, we wouldn't have this thing that we love right now in our lives. And if we start to do that every day for a couple of weeks, what we start to notice is that all around us is this magic of life that is so much bigger, and we're a part of something so much bigger than what our mind or our logic can create. So it starts to open us up to something that you and I have talked, hinted at a lot today, is that there is this bigger magic, life, vitality, this life force that infuses everything that we forget in the doing and producing. And that forgetting of that and that forgetting to tap into it actually is a big part of our burnout. Albert Einstein said it as the first and most important question every human being answers every minute of every day is the universe a friendly place? And when we access more wonder, we start to believe that there is this flow of life that we can tap into. And we start to soften our orientation so that we're more receptive to either that feedback or to partnering with other people. So it really opens us up to be fertile ground for growth and for healing and resilience. The second part of it is starting to orient. Orient from the inside out. So often we orient to our day, to the checklist of things we need to get done, the million things that are out there, the quality and control things we need to be addressed to. But But we forget, again, back to the being human, let's orient from the inside out. When I get up every morning, who am I? Who am I not as my title or as all these other things, but who am I as a being? What do I care about showing up as today? What matters to me? What energy or essence do I want to bring, and how do I want to feel in my day? So some of these things that really move us into aliveness as a human being before we get into the doing. So that step of orienting on a regular basis and noticing what's draining our energy, and can I make a small adjustment to that? Do that for a couple of weeks and see what happens. Then the R is reimagine the way we relate. So look at the relationships around you in your work and say, where am I in either an adversarial relationship where I'm protecting myself from someone and that's taking a lot of my energy, or I'm relating transactionally, but we could be up to so much more if we moved a little closer to trust and partnering. So this is one of where I find the biggest opportunities for us in our current culture and in the current dynamics we find ourselves in the world. We cannot do or achieve what we need to do by powering through and getting it done. What we need is to deepen the relationships we have with others. I was talking to a CMO just the other day about the quality of their small network that they have formed of deep trust and how much that has given them so much more energy for the hard work that they do every day. So looking for those relationships that we can deepen trust in. And then the K, I know I'm talking a lot. Just keep nourishing what matters. So in the same way that we might tend to a garden, that we might tend to children that we raise, things that we really care about, we know that showing up for it consistently in small ways is how the magic happens. And so really committing to, it may not seem like it's enough to solve the big problems, but pick a small thing, work on it for a month or so, and then notice how your energy around that is at the end. Notice the difference in your well-being state, and that gives us the motivation to keep revisiting the model.
How nice. And I am sure that there are going to be a number of members of our audience today that would be interested in working with you. So as our time together comes to a conclusion, can you maybe give us a little bit of information about how you work with individuals or entities and how they could get a hold of you?
Yeah, thank you for that invitation. So I do, as I've mentioned, a number of retreats where we get physician leaders and executives together and really try to build that sense of community so that we can each go back to the systems that they're in. I do some work with organizations around sort of cultures that actually embody this. The best way to find out about my work would probably be my website at marykaydurant.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. My guest has been Mary Kay Durant. And Mary Kay, your father must be very proud of you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. It means the world.
My thanks to Mary Kay Durant. Her time and expertise are greatly appreciated. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpractice.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpractice.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Holy cow, Batman and Robin, Red Bull Kapow.